Dan, it doesn't matter if it's from all the wind that we've seen this spring or because of heavy rains. Getting dirt to stay where it has been a battle for farmers. And throw in the added goals of soil improvement, cleaning up the water. It can be a full-time job. But for farmers with a passion to do it, they have more tools than ever to make more progress.
Live from, well, all over the place. It's Farmer Forum Day on AgriTalk. Nancy Cavazanjian. Did I get that right, Chip?
Yes, Cavazanjian.
From Wisconsin. Yes, and Brad Doyle from Arkansas. Also, we'll chat with Bob Hemesath of the Iowa Corn Growers. And we'll kick things off with Margie Eckelkamp with the scoop from the scoop. Now here's your host extraordinaire, Chip Flory.
All right, John Harrah, thank you so much. Appreciate it. Tell you what, Conservation Day. We've got Nancy is the winner of the National Conservation Legacy Award from ASA, American Soybean Association. And looking forward to having a conversation with Nancy. And, of course, Brad Doyle is the secretary of ASA. So we are we're going to get into the conservation side of things. And yesterday I saw a tweet from Bob and from Bob Hemesath. And hopefully you guys, you know, Bob's been on the show before and he's been on the show with me for a few years now. When you get
right down
to it,
we can call him a friend of the show.
Yeah. He's a great friend of the show. And,
if you spend time on the river with somebody, they're a friend of the show.
That's right. That is exactly right. But he is so engaged in so many issues that are happening in agriculture. I just wanted to have him on and have a conversation at some point. Well, then yesterday I see a tweet from him that I'll talk about when we get Bob on here. And all of a sudden I realize, man, he's a perfect fit for today's show. So on short order, Bob was nice enough to make arrangements so that he could be on the show with us this morning. And we really appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to the conversation with Bob. So, all right. Hey, before we get to Margie, let's go ahead and get to the news. What do you got, John?
Well, sure. Speaking to members of a Senate committee about the U.S. economy yesterday, Fed Chair Jerome Powell said he did not want to run through the bond market, quote, like an elephant with its debt programs. The Fed chief urged Congress to spend more money to limit the economic damage of the COVID-19 pandemic, the latest in a chorus of current and past Fed officials to tell lawmakers that inaction could lengthen the recession. Powell on Tuesday signaled support for more spending in at least three broad areas: aid for unemployed workers, funding for cities and states facing a budget crunch, and confidence-inducing health measures such as virus testing and contact tracing.
Yeah. Just real quick, when he made that comment about not wanting to run through the bond markets like an elephant, yeah, it was a negative for equities. Because well, the equity traders want him to do that.
Exactly. Shovel that cash.
That's right.
Powell echoed comments he made last week that the U.S. economy faces long-term damage from higher unemployment and a wave of small business failures due to the coronavirus pandemic. Despite recent signs of improvement, he anticipates the economy moving through three phases: shutting down, bouncing back, and stabilizing at a level of activity that is lower than before the pandemic. U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer today will unveil plans for a broader reset of its World Trade Organization commitments. Lighthizer says he believes it is time to renegotiate the particulars of America's commitment to the WTO, saying, quote, currently outdated tariff determinations are locked in place that no longer reflect members' policy choices and economic conditions. Lighthizer will address the Senate Finance Committee later this afternoon. The Environmental Protection Agency defended the extension it offered farmers who have already taken possession of dicamba to the Ninth Circuit Court yesterday. EPA argued allowing farmers to continue dicamba use through the end of July is in compliance with federal law, saying rescinding the registration, quote, only makes it illegal to distribute or sell that pesticide. It does not outlaw use of products already legally purchased. EPA also argued the Ninth Circuit has no jurisdiction on the matter. Senator Joni Ernst. Yes, Chip.
Wow. I mean, no jurisdiction on the matter. And here they've got one state in the Ninth Circuit that uses any dicamba at all. That's Arizona on some cotton.
Yeah, although I don't think that'll butter up the court much at all.
No.
Senator Joni Ernst of Iowa says she wants to hold EPA's feet to the fire on the renewable fuel standard. In comments to the Washington Review, Senator Ernst said, quote, "This is an issue I'm very comfortable in talking to President Trump about. So I think if they are smart, they will watch their P's and Q's and understand that the president has made a commitment to our nation to support the renewable fuel standard." Ernst and other corn state lawmakers are fighting efforts by their oil state colleagues to convince the Trump administration to waive this year's biofuel blending requirements amid the pandemic.
Yeah, you know, this whole waiver issue, there's also concern and legitimate concern that they are going to look at some of these gap waiver measures for 2014, 2015 that would allow the small refiners to then string together all the years so that they could continue the SRE waivers. And EPA has indicated that if those requests come in, they're going to have to look at them as if it's a typical waiver request. Troubling time.
It is indeed. Actually, everyone, last quick note. The skirmish between soldiers from India and China now reportedly has resulted in the deaths of at least 20 Indian soldiers and an unknown number of Chinese casualties. The troops are gathered on either side of the border between India and China in the disputed Ladakh region. China's foreign ministry said the situation is, quote, stable and controllable. Let's hope so.
Okay, yeah. That's one that we have. You know, that dispute has been going on for centuries.
But it's been going on quietly for 45 years.
Right, right. Yes, that's exactly right. John, thank you. We'll talk with you again later. Bring in Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop, formerly known as AgPro. How you doing, Margie?
I'm doing okay, Chip.
Good, good, good. Let's talk communication between the aerial applicators and those detasseling crews out there. What do we know?
Yeah, there is a pilot program that is going to go on in Iowa. It is a collaboration amongst multiple stakeholders endorsed by the Iowa Department of Ag, as well as the Iowa Agribusiness Association. And the platform is called Seed Field Check. And what it's going to allow aerial applicators to do is log on and see those fields indicated by multiple major seed companies, as well as some regional companies too, and where their crews are planning to be. And then also the seed companies can go in and mark those fields as now being completed from having in-person field crews present. And really, this is just to help increase that communication as well as overall safety for everybody this summer. So the aerial applicators can still watch out for the high-vis closing, can still watch out for the school buses, but can also know for sure where seed companies have indicated that neighboring fields may have already been vacated by those field crews.
Right, right. And it has been a problem in the past, Margie. There's been some close calls where...
And I think it's a challenge because if the weather is good, aerial applicators are leaving by 6 a.m., right? And for them to have been assembling multiple pieces of communication, emails, faxes, even some phone calls from the various seed companies that are in their working area, this just helps streamline all of that and really gets everybody on the same platform.
Good, good. That is good to hear. Margie, all right. You know, hey, one of these weeks, you're going to have to tell us what this is, The Scoop, formerly known as AgPro. We need to talk about that, okay?
Chip, I will look forward to it. We'll happen soon.
All right. Sounds good. That is Margie Eckelkamp, editor of The Scoop, formerly known as AgPro.
Solving the soil health puzzle? La Crosse Seed has you covered. Get started today at lacrosseseed.com/partner or call 800-356-SEED.
Everyone talks big yields, but Channel Seedsmen deliver advice that yields results. Every season, Channel Seedsmen match elite seed products with unmatched service and support to push the performance of every acre. That's why you can count on Channel for what you need to make the most of your season. You don't have to be a Channel customer to take advantage of this support. Visit channel.com/agritalk to sign up and receive expert advice that yields. And welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Glad that you could join us today. And I'm looking forward to this conversation here with Bob Hemesath, Iowa corn growers, Iowa farmer, very involved and engaged in many issues that are taking place in agriculture, and I want to get him on here right now. Bob, how you doing?
Good, Chip. How are you? Thanks for having me.
I'm doing just fine, just fine. I've got about 8 different topics that I want to get into with you, Bob, but I just want to start with this one, and it's the challenge of the spring of 2020. You're a row crop guy. You're a hog producer. You're here in Iowa. We're dealing with trade issues. We're dealing with COVID issues. We're dealing with shutdown, tough economic, the slaughter issues. This it's been a tough spring for a lot of people, hasn't it, Bob?
Yeah, it definitely has. It was tough before we had all the issues with the COVID-19, and that just multiplied it. Let's just say that. The good thing is though we had at least in our area we had a beautiful spring to get the crops
yep.
in. That took some of the stress off. Let's put it that way. You didn't have to worry about that. That was helpful.
So. Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. No doubt. So in the news this morning, we had word that U.S. Trade Representative Bob Lighthizer is going to is looking to reset the World Trade Organization commitments. The WTO, Bob, when you hear that Representative Lighthizer is looking to make some changes with the WTO, what's your thought process there?
Well, my first thought process, and I'm by no means an expert on the World Trade Organization, but my first thought process is that the WTO has been there for a long time, has been a great way to help resolve our trade issues between countries, and that we need to continue to use that as part of our issue solving mechanism as we move ahead with trade issues. I do understand, like anything, there's probably some things that need to be updated. Some of the little stuff that I read this morning, some of the percentages that we have compared to other countries, and how we it seems skewed to me at first blush. So I need more information on it to see how that translates moving forward.
You know, and my first take on this is when I looked at some of the tariff percentages I don't know if I'm saying that exactly right, but when I looked at the same information, Bob, my first thought was, wow, okay, that does look skewed. But if Lighthizer is willing and sees a need to address these issues, to me, to me, that's a good enough indication that we do need to address some of these issues, because he's been pretty doggone good in the role, hasn't he?
Yeah, for the most part, he has. Yes, he's been. He seems to be very, very well informed and educated on the issue and on the issues of trade, and understands it from a big picture and even from a macro to a micro standpoint. It seems like.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. All right. What other trade issues on your mind right now, Bob? Phase one and the purchase agreements with China has got to be right up that list, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I guess, as you mentioned, as a pork producer, you know, China's been buying a lot of pork, but, you know, it's from indications has slowed down lately. So, but as a corn grower, we need to give them the opportunity to fulfill their part of phase one, and if that
right.
takes a little more time than what originally was indicated, I don't really see a problem with that. With all the pandemic issues, you know, shipments got messed up, you know, consumption of goods and corn and ethanol and pork and all those things changed, whether it was not getting the right supply to the right places or changing from food service to in-home eating,
yeah.
all those kind of things, all those things played havoc in our trade
yeah.
situation as well. So, you know, to me, it's not surprising that we may need a little more time to reach the phase one part of it, but I think we have to allow them the opportunity to do that, you know,
yeah.
as we move forward.
Okay. All right. And it sounds to me like you're talking about the letter that 180 ag organization sent to the White House saying, okay, we understand that there is an issue here. Let's back off. Let's not put too much pressure on them. But eventually, we'd sure like to see that phase one fully implemented, wouldn't we?
Oh, no doubt about it. No doubt about it. I'm fully hopeful that we can get that done. The sooner the better. But I also understand, as I mentioned, the time aspect of it, you know, and all the issues that have come up from the pandemic and that. But yet, I still think as we move into a new normal, I guess I'll call it, we need to keep the pressure up on them to fulfill their phase one obligations. I believe there's a happy medium in there somewhere. So if they don't reach it by the original deadline, I think an extension of a little bit would definitely be in order. But by the same token, I want to hold them to their commitments in phase one, so that we can move into the phase two, phase three, whatever those, you know, and continue to build our trade with them.
Right. Right. Another one where we're hoping that they will live up to the commitments is with the RFS, Bob. Tell you, these SREs going, they're looking at going all the way. When Jeff Cooper from Renewable Fuels talked about that, watch out for these SREs coming for 2014, waiver requests coming for 2014, 2015, so that they can string together all the years necessary to keep the waivers going into the future. I thought he was crazy. And here they come. They're filing them.
Yeah. It's disappointing, and it'll be even more disappointing if the EPA allows them to allows those exemptions. Most of them aren't. I haven't seen all of them, but I would argue that most of them probably don't even fit the requirements to be an exemption. But that seems to. With this EPA under this administration, sadly, doesn't seem to matter. They kind of, you know, and that's why I think we have to continue to put a pressure on. I know Senator Ernst and Senator Grassley have continually put the pressure on them, and they will continue to do that. You know, we got to keep fighting the battle with the EPA to get them to understand that allowing these exemptions is not right for an industry that's made billions of dollars. Yes, yeah. I don't get it, especially as we struggle as farmers and the.
Yeah,
I don't have to tell anybody.
And the government
there,
outlays,
the economic standards. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the government outlays that are coming into agriculture right now. Everybody at USDA ought to be pointing at EPA and saying, "You can help us fix this problem. You just need to enforce the RFS." Okay,
exactly.
I want to go on to this because.
Exactly.
We've got Nancy, boy, you know I'm going to struggle with this every time I see it. Conveyance.
I'm not going to say it. I've met Nancy and congratulations.
I have too. Okay, Nancy Conveyance. I'm going to get it during the break. I'll fix it. But she's the National Conservation Legacy Award winner. Okay. And here I see a tweet from you yesterday that you're installing a bioreactor. Tell us about that project, what it is, what it's supposed to do.
So we've been, as part of the Iowa Nutrient Reduction Strategy, there's been multiple efforts of funding and practices that can be funded under that, under the strategy to help with water quality, and one of them is what we're doing is a bioreactor, and basically we have the field drainage tile that drains the excess moisture from the field. We go down to the edge of the field and we go to the outlet and we dig it up and we basically divert some of that water into this bioreactor, which is filled with hardwood wood chips that will help remove any nitrates that might be in that water. So it's a fairly new, I think there's one other one in Winnesha County here. Actually, the guy that's doing the work put that one in as well. We thought, you know, with the it'd be a good thing to try, a good thing to see how it worked and, you know, get one out there so that people can, you know, see it,
yeah,
see how it works, and go from there. So anything we can do to help help preserve water quality is beneficial, you know. And
yeah,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, and plus you're being proactive with it, Bob. That's one of the most important things. It's a voluntary effort.
Yeah, voluntary, and you know, it's not all these practices work for everybody, and that's one of the great things about the nutrient reduction strategy is what might work for me doesn't work for somebody else, but there's something else that might work for them.
Exactly. Bob, thank you so much for the conversation this morning, man. I really appreciate you.
You bet. Thanks, Chip. Thanks for having me.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Geez, Brian, this wheat market has really kind of become an anchor on the grains this week, hasn't it?
Yeah, definitely, Chip. You know, we've got a couple things going on in the wheat market. U.S. harvest, obviously, is picking up for the winter wheat crop, so that's putting seasonal pressure on the market. Europe's in line to get some rain, some of those areas, and that's putting pressure on the market. And then technically, both U.S. futures and European futures have broken down. Yesterday was a rough day, and then followed through today to the downside. So all three of those factors have us under pretty solid pressure in the winter wheat markets, a little bit lighter pressure on spring wheat futures, but that's also putting pressure on the corn market with corn futures down around 3 cents here mid-morning.
Yeah, it seems to be capping the upside potential in soybeans today too, huh?
Yeah, and the other thing on soybeans, we had the daily sale on Monday. Didn't have anything yesterday and no daily sales today. So I think that the struggle is going to be for beans to find buyer interest without fresh export demand news. The soy oil market is providing some early support this morning, but typically those price moves to the upside aren't real lasting when soy oil is the leader.
All right, very good. Take us over to the livestock. What's going on there?
Well, hog market, summer month contracts, new lows this morning, both in the July and August. But we fought well off of session lows and actually trading closer to session highs here mid-morning. So, but still under pressure. So, you know, the hog market is still reeling here and trying to find its footing. On the cattle side of things, we got some weaker cash trade early, and that's putting just a little bit of price pressure on futures despite their big discounts.
All right. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. AgriTalk is brought to you by America's Conservation Ag Movement, a national partnership to help farmers scale conservation for their businesses, the environment, and their communities. To learn more, visit agweb.com/ACAM.
Yeah, and a big thank you to the foundational partners for ACAM, Trust in Food, the Farm Journal Foundation, USDA's NRCS, American Farmland Trust, Corteva, Ducks Unlimited, National Corn Growers, National Pork Board, Sanderson Farms, Syngenta, The Nature Conservancy, and Valent. Appreciate the support for ACAM very much. Again, www.agweb.com/ACAM to learn more about that. All right, it's Wednesday, Farmer Forum time. Let's bring in Brad Doyle from Arkansas. How you doing, Brad?
I'm doing great, Chip. Thank you for asking.
Yeah, and I'm glad that you're here. Tell us about your operation down there in Arkansas.
So we are fourth generation, primarily soybeans, rotated with rice. Started by my wife's grandfather, actually, who migrated down here from Iowa. And so we're very flat. Rice grows well because of our hard pan soils, low internal drainage, but really excited that we're hopefully going to wrap up planting here this week here.
Oh, good. Good. Also a soybean producer and involved in the American Soybean Association as secretary, right?
That is correct. I have been on the board of directors for several years, currently secretary, and also co-chairman for the Commodity Classic Trade Show.
Excellent. Hey, I just got my save the date email for Commodity Classic, Brad.
We're getting excited about it. You know, it's 25th anniversary, so, you know, I think the trade show floor is already sold out.
Oh, good, good. Well, and I tell you what, with the way that everything is shutting down with the state fairs and this and that and everything else, if we get to that point and it's all a green light on getting together again, that's going to be a lot of fun for a lot of people, Brad. Looking forward to it.
Yes, absolutely. We're not going to worry about that right now. We feel like, you know, by the end of February, everything will be back to normal and we'll have some solutions out there.
Excellent. Excellent. All right, Brad, we're going to get you back into the conversation here in just a minute, but let's bring in Nancy Kavazanjian. She is from Wisconsin, joins us right now. She's also the winner of the 2020 National Conservation Legacy Award. Nancy, congratulations and welcome to AgriTalk.
Thanks a lot. It's great to be here with you today.
Great. Okay, Wisconsin, tell us about your operation up there, Nancy.
Well, we are cash grain farmers, and we grow corn, soybeans, and wheat in rotation. I used to say we're the only farm in Wisconsin that doesn't have dairy cows, but that hasn't been true for probably the last 20 or 30 years. Right. There are a lot more grain farmers up here now, and we are in the northern corn belt, so we have some unique issues that we and challenges that we deal with.
Oh, yeah, absolutely you do. One of the, I don't know if you heard the conversation that I had with Bob Hemesath from Iowa. I think you know him or you've met him. He was putting in a bioreactor, that water quality and management. What are the efforts that you're doing up there, Nancy?
Absolutely. And I assume that his bioreactor was for nitrogen management.
Yes.
We also know that phosphorus is a huge problem with all our lakes and streams. And so we are proofing, and it's a proof of concept, which we have proved it does work, a bioreactor that would remove the phosphorus from our water stream. Mm-hmm. We have a tiled field that we retiled that had been tiled back in the 80s, and we were able to modify the drainage some, and it's an edge-of-the-field treatment, just like the bioreactor for nitrogen, and it there's a chemical reaction that occurs that precipitates out or drops out the phosphorus that is dissolved in the water stream so that the water that you're emptying into the lakes and rivers is cleaner and we don't have those algae blooms.
How successful has it been, Nancy? I mean, this is a much, much needed effort.
Absolutely, and it's still emerging technology. So we know the concept works. We're using a slag product. It's a waste product of the manufacturing industry, and it reacts with the phosphorus, and it immediately does drop out the phosphorus, and it makes a calcium product. But we are not getting the flow we want, so we're still working on doing some modifications to this. But we're working with a local watershed group and with a local non-farm lake association. They're just really excited about this. And even some of our rural wastewater treatment plants that need to reduce their phosphorus load, we may be able to swap phosphorus credits with them at some point. But it is exciting. We know it works. We're still working on modifications to make the flow work the way we want it to.
How does it, Nancy, how does it feel to be right on the cutting edge of an innovation like this?
Well, we're excited about that. You know,
I always
joke that I married a farmer who is an innovator, and I always told him, innovators don't make money. We want to be an early adopter. But we're at that point in our lives now that it is fun to be an innovator. And I'm working with Arizona State University, where my brother, who's not a farmer, never has been a farmer, has a lab, and he's a geotechnical engineer, and he's the one who told us about this practice. So it is exciting to take a non-farm practice and adapt it and to make it work on the farm in real world.
That's fascinating. That is absolutely fascinating. Brad, what you're rice farmer, soybean farmer, you've got a lot of water management issues to deal with, and I'm sure that quality is part of it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So we do flood irrigate the rice during the summertime. We're actually putting out your urea nitrogen right now and starting to flood on the rice. We are fortunate enough that we have a tailwater recovery system on our farm that we can catch all of our drainage, all of our runoff, and we have a 100-acre reservoir that my father-in-law built in the late 80s to store and manage that water. So we use that primarily as our irrigation source, and if we need backup, we will go to our groundwater wells.
Okay.
So irrigation and drainage are, you know, work hand in hand. We need to be able to get the water on the rice and off. Then also when we flood irrigate or furrow irrigate our soybeans, it's very critical to get that water flushed across the field and then capture all that runoff and use that in a circulatory system.
Yeah. Fascinating. Okay, I want to move on because we've got some plenty that I want to cover here. Here in northern Iowa, Nancy, the push for cover crops, it feels like it's catching on, and it's not without issues. I get that. There are some concerns with it, but it's catching on. Even further north up in Wisconsin, what are some of the challenges that you face with a cover crop?
Yeah, we really like cover crops too. If only we could get them established. You know, we don't have the growing season that probably Brad and even my Central Illinois farmer friends have, because when we're combining our corn, the ground is frozen and you cannot establish a cover crop. So we are working really hard to try and get more small grains into our operation. The grains can come off in July, and then we hope we can get our cover on there. And we know that last year when we had a lot of prevent plant, we had a lot of cover crops, and we can see the corn just looks fabulous in those areas. So if we could just get it established on frozen ground or interseeding, and we haven't found a way yet to even make interseeding work here in Wisconsin.
Okay. All right. So what are the crops that you are using in that process, Nancy?
Oh, well, we like to use a mix. So we love the tillage radish and the turnips because they're big and they can scavenge nitrogen, and they also help break up the soil. We also believe we need some brassicas, like we have a sun hemp, a canola, and then the rye and the smaller, finer rooted crops. So we have a mix. And then we always put in sunflowers because they look pretty. And we farm in kind of a suburban area, so it catches the attention of the non-farm public, and they love the sunflowers. They also like the turnips and the radishes. They'll go out and eat them sometimes, and we say, yeah, go ahead and grab a few. That doesn't hurt anything. So we're very aware of public perception, and so the sunflowers always look pretty in the field.
Right. Brad, are you doing cover crops, or are you focused more on the perimeters of the field?
I think more the perimeters, because we're such we get so waterlogged in the wintertime. A lot of our fields, we have flashboard riser pipes, so we can actually put the stop log boards in. We can catch rainfall, and we create a tremendous amount of waterfowl habitat for the migratory birds that come down the Mississippi Flyway. So, I concentrate on my borders. And like Nancy, I use tillage radish. We use cereal rye. We love clovers, not just crimson clover. We also use balanza and berseem to kind of elongate the bloom period, because the bees and pollinator species just go crazy with that. Also, we use some rapeseed, which has some beautiful yellow flowers. And wildlife, you know, we don't have a lot of timber around us, but where we do, the deer just absolutely go crazy over our seed blends. And it's pretty exciting. Like Nancy says, when people drive by and see that, they're not accustomed to it, and they feel like you're, you know, trying to enhance your farm for the betterment of the wildlife and birds and pollinator species.
Right. Well, I was going to ask you, Brad, when you were talking about flooding the field for rice and some flood irrigation on the soybeans, I was going to ask about flooding that timber for some of that classic Arkansas duck hunting, but it sounds like you got plenty of that too.
I don't have as much flooded timber. I've got more flooded fields because we harvest our soybeans and our rice, and those are the fields we hunt during the wintertime. So I have, it's fun. It's great to be able to reap the harvest and then hunt the same exact field for waterfowl. So pretty
good
exciting.
Good for you. Okay, Nancy, when we come back, Brad made a mention there about catching rainfall. I want to talk about doing just that when we come back. We've got a farmer forum going today. We've got Nancy Cavazanjan from Wisconsin, and Brad Doyle from Arkansas.
AgriTalk is brought to you by Bear Plus Rewards. Sign in and start earning at mybearplus.com.
It's a farmer forum we've got going on AgriTalk today, and we're talking conservation, which is a good thing because the farmer forum is sponsored by America's Conservation Ag Movement, which is a national partnership designed to help all farmers more rapidly scale the adoption of conservation agriculture and its economic and environmental benefits to farmers in their communities. Learn more, www.agweb.com/ACAM. Okay, we are talking with Brad Doyle from Arkansas and Nancy Kavazanjian from Wisconsin. And what we learned... In the last segment, we learned that Brad is dealing with some really flat ground. Nancy, that's not your situation, is it?
No, not at all. In Wisconsin, we have rolling glaciated soils. We have some unique landforms, such as drumlins, which are actually elongated hills that have been formed by left behind by the glaciers.
Right, right. So Brad was talking about catching rainfall. It's not hard to do on that pool table flat ground, but you got to put some stuff in the way of that heavy rainfall to slow down the water movement, right, Nancy?
Absolutely. And recent years, we've had really heavy rainfalls. We'll get, 2, 3, 4, 5-inch rain sometimes. And with those hills, we really worry about soil loss from erosion. So one of the things we did, and we did it just this last year, was to establish these grass strips along the contour of the drumlin or the hill slope, and they're called prairie strips, where we've established some perennial grasses as well as, again, we love the flowers, so we put some flowers in there.
Mm-hmm. And those prairie strips, I think about the... the waterways and everything that we've got here in Northeast Iowa, Northern Iowa, you do a lot of that waterway work too, right? And terraces, any terrace work?
No, we don't have terraces because we don't have hills quite that steep. We have more of a gentle roll. I know as you get along the Mississippi, you do use terracing, but we rely on no-till and some, we're looking at tiling some of the areas to direct our flow and then the edge of the water, edge of the field treatments. But the prairie strips are really important.
Cool.
And I know they're catching on. They started in Iowa, so we're following you.
Very cool. Very cool. All right, Brad, all of this, like I said at the start of the show, it's all about keeping dirt where it's supposed to be in many cases. It's about improving water quality, but it's also about improving soil health and soil quality. And up here where we get the freeze and the thaw and the heaving of the soil, it helps to break things up. You probably need to do some things a little differently down in Arkansas to care for your soil health, right?
Yeah, so we love to no-till when possible, and that would require a dry harvest. We have a lot of farmers who will no-till their rice in the following year behind soybeans. So dry harvest equals, more opportunity. But with rice harvest, it usually doesn't happen. We tend to rut the fields up just because of the waterlogged soils. If you want to call it just-in-time tillage, it would be tilling right before we plant the next crop. So it's not like we're really exposing a lot of soil through the wintertime. We still have all of that biomass that was left on top of the ground. The root structures below ground are fully intact, but I mean, we've got earthworms galore on our farm. Okay. Even with our light tillage, we're not deep ripping anything anymore. The days of deep rip is long gone. So we're using shallow tillage to our advantage. We get, like I said, it's very, very important for us to have surface drainage, and that's where it's so critical to get that clean.
And, right.
Yeah, big difference in hill ground and the extremely flat ground that we have.
Yeah, what are you doing to maybe boost the organic matter in some of that soil down there, Brad?
Yeah, so, Arkansas is one of the top poultry-producing states in the United States, and so we're fortunate. About 30, 45 miles west of us, we have the edge of the Ozark Mountains, and that's where the bulk of the poultry operations are. And over time, they have on-farm applied litter and their phosphorus levels are concerning. So we are welcome that litter, from those houses to come over here and apply on our low organic matter soils. And that is one of our tremendous, tremendous successes in bringing up our soybean yields, is using that chicken litter, a ton to a ton and a half per acre, that brings in that organic matter that we're looking for, along with the P and K and all the micros and biologicals that the litter provides for us.
Very cool.
In addition to a full, fertility management program, we're still monitoring everything, so we don't want to overload any particular nutrient.
Sure. Nancy, it was cool how Brad immediately, when we talked about soil health, went straight to the earthworms. It's a big tell on how healthy the soil is, isn't it?
It certainly is, and I laugh because I have seen my husband stop his pickup and go and scoop earthworms off the road after a good rain and try and get them back in our field. We consider them our livestock. And we don't have poultry litter, but we have a lot of dairy manure from our neighbors that we value, and we also will apply when we can get it and put it on our fields with a nutrient management plan balanced just the same way he uses chicken litter.
Right. Absolutely. I feel like we could talk all day about what you guys are doing to improve the soil quality, improve water quality, and to promote the conservation effort that is out there. But unfortunately, that music is starting to play, which means we're getting really close to the end of the show. I got to say it again. Nancy, congratulations. Winner of the National Conservation Legacy Award from ASA. Good stuff, Nancy. It was sure fun talking with you.
Thank you.
All right. And Brad Doyle, Secretary of ASA, farmer down in Arkansas. I might come see you in the fall sometime, Brad.
You're welcome anytime.
I appreciate that. All right. Thank you so much. And thank you for listening today. Appreciate that. You got to come back this afternoon. We are going to be talking a lot about the dairy market. We've got Mike North from Commodity Risk Management Group lined up and ready to go. And tomorrow morning, we're going to get a CFAP update from USDA Undersecretary Bill Northey.